This is Internet Marketing.
Hello and welcome to the Internet Marketing Podcast, formerly known as the Site Visibility Podcast, produced by the team behind Brighton SEO. I'm Kelvin Newman, and in today's episode, I'm joined by Chima Meje and Luke Gosher, and we'll be discussing how to use AI content in your marketing. Hello and welcome to today's episode. I'm always excited when we record these podcasts to get to speak to people who I've met via our conferences or kind of just more broadly know from this the lovely community that we've got around digital marketing where people are so willing and prepared to share their experiences and knowledge. So I was really excited today to bring together two people who I'm really excited about their take on what is a really interesting and current topic. So talking about content, which is one of those things that's right at the center of any form of digital marketing, whether you're an SEO, a social media person, paid media person, any of those kind of different disciplines that you might be kind of operating in, content is obviously very, very key. And of course, AI, it's one of these topics that, you know, has been in the background for a decent chunk of time, but it really does feel like in the last 6 months or so, people are kind of dealing with it a bit in a bit more of a practical way and actually making use of it in their processes and making use of it in their ways of doing things. So that's what we're going to talk about. But it's always lovely to get a bit of an introduction from our guests in terms of who they are, where they come from, and kind of how they came to work and talk about content. So I'm going to come to you, Luke, first, if that's okay. Can I get the who's Luke and yeah, how did you come to be involved in this world we're talking about now?
Yeah, of course. So, of course, my name's Luke Gosher. I've been in SEO for around about 8-9 years now and currently work at a fantastic agency called Redico Digital. I kind of fell into SEO, let's say. My final year of university, kind of doing a business and marketing degree, kind of come across SEO and was really intrigued and kind of almost just fell into it, really, and have not looked back since. But on the AI side of things, as you mentioned, kind of over the past year, just become a real enthusiast and really intrigued by the way that people are using AI, but also how human USPs are really enhancing the way we use AI as well. So in a nutshell, that's a little bit about me and kind of how I fell into SEO and a little bit about my AI enthusiasm, I guess.
Nice one. And Chima, how about yourself?
I always have trouble describing myself. Who am I?
Open-ended question as always.
All right, so my name is Chima Meje. I'm the senior content marketing manager at Moz. The stuff I love doing more than anything else right now is creating omnichannel content strategies, and I'm obsessed with AI. Everything I do right now is on AI, writing content, editing content, brainstorming. Like, I'm just really excited about all of the stuff that we can do about it. And I think for now, that's my bio.
Cool. No, sounds perfect. And yeah, I mean, that gets us to a really interesting starting point for a question. Like, how do you feel about AI? You know, content and, you know, content creators in, you know, all the different shapes and forms in which they come could feel quite threatened by like artificial intelligence. Certainly that's the backstory or the context to some of the ways people have been framing AI. Chima, is that something that you like? It sounds here that you're very positive about it rather than like concerned. Is that fair to say?
Look, Kelvin, I think it's just a lot of miseducation. And yeah. you know how people had all this propaganda around COVID-19? It's the same thing that's happening with AI. What they don't understand, they just speak negatively about it. I keep telling people that if you see all of those posts where people are saying that the output is rubbish, the output is this, the output is that, blah, 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 it's because they're not actually using it well. They're not giving good inputs. AI is garbage in, garbage out. I like to say, if you give it the right input, it's going to give you the right output. I've been using AI to write content, like I'm talking build entire topic clusters. And there's one I'm working on right now that when I publish it, people are going to be like gobsmacked to find out that I use AI to create that stuff. I use AI to edit content. I use AI to update. Like 90% of the social media content I created last year, I wrote it with AI. I use AI in so many different ways that people are not even thinking about. But again, I say, that it is the input. People are expecting AI to be the expert instead of them being the expert and then using AI to kind of like, fill up that knowledge gap or like just help you like kickstart that creativity, but it should never replace your expertise. And I think that's where the problem lies. You're trying to use AI to replace your expertise. You're not giving it the right input. You're expecting magic. And what you just get is low quality results.
Mm. That's really interesting. So yeah, it's kind of a lot about that. The use of the tool is as much where the success or failure of AI is going to come in. Is that fitted with your experience as well, Luke, in terms of kind of the, you know, getting what you've wanted or like perhaps being a little bit more disappointed about what some of these like tools or methods
I really agree with Shima on that. Like the analogy about COVID-19 and the miseducation very much relates to AI, and I 100% support that. I think there is a miseducation, and generally what I see is people wanting AI to be the golden bullet, but it's not a one and done type of situation. You really need to, there's an art to prompting, there's an art to giving AI context about what you want the output to be. And lazy inputs are going to provide poor outputs. And it's a real process to ensure that we're giving generative AI the right amount of context it needs to deliver something special. And also, I think just starting small, looking at your day-to-day and looking at where you can implement AI to free your time up is really where the best success comes. I think there's a thought process that we have to almost create something magical and something massive. And really it's these small wins where we're seeing AI really excel, at least from my perspective. I know different people use it in different ways. And whilst we're talking about the miseducation, I think also one thing that I see a lot is a lot of people posting about their prompts, like copy and paste this prompt. And there's nothing more that annoys me most than people kind of sharing prompts, because there's a whole process before you give a final prompt, at least from what I've found as well. It's all the background and education and context that you give to generative AI before you give it your final prompt. And that's really what's opened my world up of how to use AI for the best and really get really good outputs from it. And copy and pasting prompts is not a great starting point. It's good to just see the capabilities, but I think there's more to it than just a one and done type situation.
You go, Chima.
Yeah, I agree with Luke there, because before you even start talking about prompting, people forget that you have to give it that background instruction in like the custom instruction. You have to start there. It's that custom instruction that then feeds everything. You have to provide like some serious context. Who is the person that this content is for? What is the problem that they are facing? Where are they in the buyer journey? All of all that stuff. You also have to give it some training data before you even start giving it a prompt on what to do. But then what we just see on Twitter, because it's mostly Twitter that I see all these marketing bros, is just, buy this list of 100 prompts that is going to make you a better marketer for $5. And then you buy something for $5 and then it doesn't really give you anything, because nobody can teach you how to provide that context. It has to be personalized. And I like the stuff Luke also said about the small wins, because this morning I used ChatGPT to understand how to do something in GA4. GA4 is the bane of my existence. But instead of going to watch like 1,000 videos on YouTube or like trying to like find the resource on Google search, I just put that instruction in ChatGPT. It helped me figure it out, and boom, I got my answer. So totally agree with you there, Luke. It's those small wins that help you like shave off time in your day-to-day task.
Yeah, I mean, I think I've certainly seen similar kind of patterns, whether it's been in, like more visual generated ones, like Midjourney I've used a fair amount of as well. But yeah, it's in ChatGPT as well. It's often I've tended to use it where it's been like, well, you've got that blank sheet of paper. And it's been that kind of like, it's almost when I disagree with the output that actually like gives me the direction. I was like, almost, I didn't know what to think. And it's like, oh, well, it's not that. So therefore that then takes me off in a direction.
Yes. Even that process of disagreeing with ChatGPT gives me an idea on what I need to be doing. I'm like, no, yeah, this is what I was looking for. This is more like it. And already, yeah, I'm already answering my own question based on what it has given me. So yeah, definitely.
Yeah, and I suppose some of the things about format as well, like again, that's been one for me where it's that kind of like, yeah, it'll often kind of give you a structure of things to deal with, and then you're kind of going, okay, that's, yeah, like you can give you the form that then you're able to kind of, you know, play around with and that type of thing as well. So what are some of the other ways you've been using it? You know, in terms of Luke, you kind of like talked about the kind of prompts engineering side of things. How have you been using like what like some of these newer tools in the day-to-day bits of your marketing responsibilities? Any particular things you found it's worked well for?
Yeah, so I've really been using it like on a daily basis, just process to like looking at what processes were taking me the most amount of time. And one of the things that I do the most is I'm in and out of spreadsheets looking at data, and just being able to feed data points to ChatGPT to be able to, you know, pull out key insights that then drive me to my next step of looking into those specifics a little bit more. That's a real core call out of how I use it every day. Also have been experimenting and playing around with custom GPTs, which kind of just take that custom instruction to the next level, because now you can start to give it different documents to learn from. And custom GPTs are I have the most fun with now, because it's a real specific area. So for example, we've created one around content quality, and it's able to give us particular outputs around content quality that we want to look for. And it's learned through previous examples of work that we've done around content quality as well. So we've really been able to be bespoke with it. Also schema ideas and schema generation is another way I like to use ChatGPT. But more recently, I had a really great experience of just teaching myself about accessibility on site. So it was an area that I was not so familiar with, but using GPT, I was able to actually teach myself in a more structured way around some of the issues around accessibility that might hinder some websites, and was able to really learn from that as well. So there's a whole host of ways I'm using tools like ChatGPT, but those are some of the real call outs and more recent ways that I've been using.
That's interesting, isn't it? That kind of ability that obviously different people have different sort of learning styles or content preferences. And I'm sure that's probably been, you know, I know I've heard you talk about that before in terms of content preferences and ways of formatting that people are going to respond to. I hadn't really thought about it in that context, that actually there's going to be, yeah, loads of people where that kind of dialogue is a really powerful way of learning, isn't it? And that's kind of, yeah, that, I hadn't really crossed my mind as kind of a way of doing that. How about yourself, Jimmy? Is it, like, what are some of the things you talked about? You've used it a lot in ways that would have surprised people that they didn't know they were using it. What are some of the things that have kind of stood out that are potentially good use cases?
I like the custom GPTs too. I have one for editing. I have one for writing social media. I have one for writing. I feel like I have custom GPTs for like everything, but you have to break it down. First thing I use it for is to edit content, because I do a lot of editing.
Yep.
So that's the first thing I use it for. The editing means that I have like a list of instructions of how I like content edited. So I can just feed it some training data and then it just goes to work. And honestly, that saves me so much time in a day, so much time. Like something that would usually take me like a full day now takes me maybe 2 hours. That is a lot of time saving. I use it to create content outlines. So usually what I do is that when I want to write something or when somebody sends a content outline, I have an idea of what I want it to look like. So I can start with what I have in mind or what I want to cover if I'm the one writing the content. And then I ask ChatGPT to review this top 10 links ranking for this keyword, and then help me find gaps that I've not explored. Tell me what other resources I could add in here to like make the content pop. Tell me what else I could put in here that would improve the reader's experience. And then it just like takes my first outline and gives me something much more better.
Mm. That's really interesting as well. And is that, I suppose there's an interesting process you go through there, which is like maybe trying to articulate preferences or approaches that you have that you might like have not articulated before, perhaps, which is kind of, I suppose, a useful process to reflect upon. You know, like becoming better at working with like the people on your team, because if you're able to kind of articulate what you're looking for in a way, that's often a good skill to go into, right?
Honestly, I don't think I work really well with teams. I feel like I'm sorry, but it's true. I work really well alone. So ChatGPT just helps me do that more efficiently. Like somebody gives me like content that is not really good, I'd rather go and work on it myself and then publish it than going back and forth trying to get the person to to get it done. Honestly, I'm just admitting the truth.
I think that, and the reality is that many, like, whether it's distributed remote teams or people working all over the world, or in, you know, it's increasingly common where you're not sat next to someone who's working with you, right? So this ability to be able to get some of those prompts, or yeah, like allowing people to be individual, you know, working in organizations, or sorry, working in ways that would be like they're in a large organization, but they're not. That's kind of a pretty powerful, you know, democratizing way of approaching some of these, you know, the way in which work is changing, right? Cool. And so, Luke, I'm going to come to you in terms of, you know, some of the ethical considerations of, you know, using AI generated content. It's obviously an interesting sort of world to deal with, where you're kind of, you know, potentially, you know, there's all kinds of challenges that you might have to deal with in terms of something that's AI generated. It could be around, you know, hallucinations where, you know, things are being imagined by the AI, or, you know, the sourcing of the information that they're using. How have you dealt with that challenge? Is it one that's kind of like, well, actually, this is such a big thing, it's quite hard to deal with? Or, you know, how are you grappling with those sorts of challenges and questions?
Yeah, it's a really difficult one, because the landscape does seem fairly new in terms of the ethical challenges that we face. I think there's also that kind of legal and compliance issue that is in the back of everyone's head when they're dealing with AI. Me personally, I always ensure that the data that I give is somewhat anonymized, just, again, probably out of paranoia more than anything, but just to be on the safe side, anonymizing data, making sure it's not personally identifiable. That's kind of my main kind of starting point. And it's interesting to kind of see what's going on in the industry as well, just around this whole New York Times versus OpenAI court case that's going on. I think the whole industry are keeping eyes on that, just to see what outcome that does provide, because that has the potential to maybe impact the way the future of generative AI works. So yeah, it's one that I'm keeping a close eye on, but there are challenges just in terms of, you know, being sure that this data is not going to get out there somehow. I know that there was issues with Bard kind of indexing certain elements that it shouldn't have been from people's conversations, which is, yeah, not great. But yeah, I think, yeah, that's kind of where I'm starting with it, just ensuring that I'm not giving it anything identifiable, and just playing it safe, really.
I suppose that's, yeah, again, that kind of, yeah, realizing that this is new, right? And that there's going to be, I think, yeah, we all need to be aware that how we're using these tools now is very different to how we were using them a year ago, and in a year's time it'll probably be very different as well. But acknowledging that, yeah, these aren't perfect organizations, and that their, you know, behavior that they've got might not be 100% aligned with you as an individual and all the organizations that you're working with. So having that kind of awareness of that is good. How about yourself, Jima? It's kind of like, potentially there's some, you know, have you felt like conflicted in terms of how you use these tools, or the outputs they're producing, or some of the challenges around that?
Again, I have to agree with Luke. You can never be too paranoid with any of these AI tools, honestly. So I feel like the safe thing to do is, I know it sounds manual, but I would say, yeah, first step, anonymizing your data if you can, not saving history. Like, when you finish a conversation, delete it, come back, save. I try to save the conversation offline, like the training data. I try to save it offline, and then every time I want to do something, I come back and I put it brand new, finish it, delete it again. Even though it's manual work, honestly, it's worth it. I think the other one is about validation. Nobody's really talking about validation, even for people like us who are professionals, who are experts, who've been in the game for a while. There are still some times where I have output from ChatGPT that I think I've cross-checked, that I've, oh, okay, this is correct. And then I go and do a bit of research later on, maybe a few days after, and then I realize that the information is false. And I start feeling like an idiot for not seeing it, you know, when it's created, the output. So I think that's another major concern, validation, because sometimes the rubbish might seem like something meaningful, but it's just rubbish. So there needs to be a validation process with the output. There also needs to be quality control. I don't think we're doing enough quality control because of how much pressure content teams are on right now to meet up with high quality and high quantity there's just this insane demand now from content teams because of people assuming that ChatGPT can do all the work. And what happens is that you start seeing cracks through the pipeline. Quality, there's no way to avoid it. It starts dropping. I think the last one has to be transparency. That's the most dicey. Like, how do you share with your clients that you're using AI? How much do you tell them about your AI use? Does that affect the way you charge them? Like, I don't think anybody's actually really talking about this.
Yeah.
The transparency of using AI and that data with the people that we work with.
I suppose that is a really interesting, two elements of the bits I want to pick up on you were talking about there. And I think, it's definitely that kind of, that ability to sort of verify. And I think one of the things I think is interesting and also sort of creates the challenge around this is that perhaps in the past, if there was, you'd be unconscious ways you could pick up in the, the reliability of the piece of writing, right? So if it was like, the grammar was poorly written or whatever it was, there'd be these kind of indirect things that you pick up on. And I suppose that's one of the challenges of the outputs of these large language models is that they're so right in many ways that it's easy to assume that they're right in every way, which obviously isn't the case. And that's where that validation process comes in. I think that's interesting. Yeah. And how have you found that, Luke, in terms of is there kind of a, I suppose if you're working agency side or you're working brand side, there's going to be these challenges where people just assume that you're using an AI, so therefore the output must be terrible or you're lazy or you shouldn't be using that, when actually it might be the opposite, right? Where it's actually allowed you to do more, deliver more of what you were asked to do. Is that a quandary you're finding yourself having to kind of navigate?
Yeah. I think transparency is definitely the best policy when it comes to AI and talking with clients about AI. But what I found more so is that it's freed up a lot of time for people to, use their other human-based skills, like whether that's creativity or analytical or critical thinking. Being able to use AI frees up time to be able to focus more in those areas. And I think from a client perspective, you're only going to be getting more for what you're kind of using the agency for, really, because that step of human intervention with using AI is super critical and it shouldn't be ignored. Like, there should be validation process, there should be QA processes of reviewing content or reviewing work, and that's something that we do a lot, like making sure things are checked through thoroughly, and to also question, whether it's something that we've created or an AI's created, question it and ensure that it's factually correct. And I think that human intervention has to come in, whether you're solely relying on AI to create content or to, create something that you're working on to validate whether something's right or wrong. There should be that human intervention within the process before it goes client facing.
I think that, and it's probably a good skill that probably should have been the case anyway, right? Which would have been easier to get, but that kind of QA, processing or validation stuff potentially is one that could have been in place and should have been a thing before, but now it's just given us that much to do that. Well, like I say, really, really interesting topic. I could talk about this for hours and hours, but our time's sort of coming to an end here. So I'd love to get a sense of, I'll come to you first, Luke, if that's right, in a kind of like maybe a resource or a tip or a be it a newsletter, a book or a tool that you've used recently that you think potentially might be worth our listeners or viewers checking out in the coming weeks.
Absolutely. So this one actually inspired my Brighton SEO talk topic, which will be in April. So it's the Everyday AI podcast, which is available on Spotify and other platforms. But there's a really, really great resource, a free webinar, which Jordan, the host of the show, kind of runs through. It's called the Prime Prompt and Polish webinar. It's an hour long. I recommend anyone to kind of sign up to it, but it really helps think about prompting in a different way. And as we mentioned, things like giving, before you've given your prompt, to give the generative AI context, give it background of your problem and what you're trying to achieve. I recommend you listeners to go and check out the Everyday AI PPP webinar course. It's a free course. It's definitely worth checking out. So
I've made a note of that one myself to go and check that one out. That sounds like a good one. How about yourself, Chima, as well?
I think I would recommend, if you're an agency, there's a blog post I would recommend you read on the Moz blog. It was by what's his name again? Tom Jeffrey from Screaming Frog, and it's Why Should I Pay You to Use AI for My SEO? So I think it's a really good resource that digs into the ethical consideration, transparency, and all of all those nuances around working with clients when you use AI. Another one I would recommend is Tommy Walker. Tommy Walker, I think he has done some presentations around AI. He has some really, really, really good tricks on getting the best out of AI. Tommy Walker and Jacob McMillan. Just look for anything from these two guys around AI and automations. They are both really brilliant folks.
Ah, lovely. Well, some really good recommendations. That's exactly what we love to hear, like people to go and check out and see what they're up to and all those kind of bits and pieces. But if our listeners want to kind of keep in touch with you and see some of your work and projects that you're working on, I know both of you, you know, doing talks, doing, you know, producing content and all of that sort of stuff. What's the best ways for them to kind of check out what you're up to and some of the things you're up to, Chima?
Yeah, my website, Zenith Copy, Moz Blog, on socials with my name, Chima Medre.
Fantastic. And how about you, Luke?
So I'm really bad at socials, but I will get better this year. So that's one of my plans. So yeah, you can follow me on Twitter. It's lgosh is my Twitter handle, but also the Redico website posts many different blogs, some written by myself and my other fantastic team members as well. So check that out if you're interested in kind of seeing what
fantastic.
We're up to.
Excellent. And yeah, of course, both of you coming up at Brighton SEO as well, I can definitely recommend and that session. I know I really want to go and see it as well. So yeah, thanks so much. And yeah, we will keep in touch. And thanks everybody for listening along. And we will be back again very soon with some more episodes. Thanks so much for joining us for today's episode of the Internet Marketing Podcast, produced by the team behind Brighton SEO, the world's largest specialist digital marketing conference covering SEO, PPC, paid social, web analytics, and content marketing. If you want to find out more about us and the show, you can check out the website, internetmarketingpodcast.org. And if you've not already subscribed to the show, you should hit that subscribe button. And can I ask a favor, if you are subscribed and you're enjoying the show, can you leave us a review wherever you're watching or listening to the show? And if you want to get in touch, become a guest on the show, or just generally feedback about what we're doing, you can always email me. That's kelvin@brightonseo.com. So kelvin@brightonseo.com. Or of course, you can contact me on social media. So at LinkedIn or Twitter, my usernames are Kelvin Newman. See you soon.